Good evening, everyone. Welcome. This is Dr. Nalini Chilkov. Somebody's unmuted themselves. If you keep yourself muted, then we'll have quiet. And then if you want to speak, you can unmute yourself. Thank you. So I'll just tell you how to do that, and then I'll finish the welcome. You hit *7 to unmute yourself. I want to welcome everyone to the Ground Rounds call for the Foundations of Integrative Oncology. We'll be on the phone for about an hour. I'll start with a clinical pearl, and then I'll move into case studies and questions that were submitted by all of you. And then I will take a look at a couple of newly published articles that I think would be of interest to you and that we do post into the library for you to have access to. And just a reminder, keep yourself muted, and then I pause in between different sections so that you can unmute yourself and ask questions freely, and we can have a discussion and learn from you and hear your opinions as well. So let me start with the clinical pearl for this month. And I really decided to go in a different direction for this month and do something on Chinese medicine. And in this context, the menopausal symptoms that many women face as menopause is induced by their cancer treatments. And it's a big complaint of a lot of women patients, and not just women being treated for hormonal cancers. And so I think that Chinese medicine is absolutely the best thing for managing the menopause transition in healthy and unhealthy women who are under treatment. And so even though many of you are not acupuncturists or Chinese medicine practitioners, I'm going to talk about formulas that are really easily accessible and safe to use and tell you where to order them if you want to. And then I've added acupuncture points for the acupuncturists who are here. And there's just a ton of references also on Chinese medicine, acupuncture, and Chinese herbs. And I've given you a lot of references so that you can be able to look to them if you wish. So we get patients who have had menopause induced or accelerated because of their cancer treatment. So chemotherapy can induce ovarian failure. And some women get their periods back after they have chemo, and some women do not. Radiation therapy to the pelvis often causes ovarian failure. Of course, having an ovarectomy, having your ovaries removed, puts you right into menopause. And then hormone therapies that are blocking estrogen, of course, will lead to menopausal symptoms, and sometimes to menopause in some women who are close to menopause. And so those would be ovarian suppression therapies like Lupron and Zoladex, aromatase inhibitors like letrozole and estrazole and exemestane, tamoxifen, which is a selective estrogen receptor modulator, and so are phytoestrogens. So, but they aren't as strong as tamoxifen. And then fulvestrant, which actually degrades the estrogen receptor and is usually reserved for advanced metastatic treatment-resistant hormonal cancers, because you don't want to degrade the estrogen receptor in every person. All right, so the common symptoms that women complain of are vasomotor symptoms, meaning hot flashes, sleep disturbances, urinary incontinence, vulvovaginal atrophy, pain with intercourse, loss of libido, depression, joint pain, and osteopenia and osteoporosis. So I will touch on most of these. As I began to put this clinical pearl together, I realized this should have been a half-day workshop. So we'll touch on things that are actionable for you that you can use in your practice right away. So the traditional Chinese herbal formulas, I'll start with those, and then I'll weave in the acupuncture. And you should have all gotten an email that have the slides and the notes. And so look in your email inbox if you didn't, because that's what we're using at the moment. So a very famous Chinese herbal prescription is Erjian decoction. And this has all of these formulas pretty much have nutritive tonic herbs and heat clearing herbs. And so that you'll see some combination of these. And many of these traditional formulas that I have selected for this lecture having been in use hundreds or thousands of years, they're very safe and they're mostly nourishing. And so when we use tonics, they're more food-like than drug-like. And menopause is very much looked at as a deficiency type of syndrome. And then on top of that, the stress of cancer. And so these are very restorative to women. And the usual dose is 3 grams twice a day. And if you get the freeze-dried granules, for women who don't like to swallow pills, you just dissolve them in hot water. And it comes with a little measuring spoon, and it's usually one little spoon. And then if you the woman prefers capsules, you can get most of these formulas in capsules, 3 capsules twice a day. And you can also double those doses if you're not getting a response because it's just safe. These are very, very food-like. So the Erjiantong is a traditional formula that is also good, not only for hot flashes, but for insomnia and depression, and for just kind of burned out, exhausted woman. It's a great formula. They're a very famous formula that is used in all kinds of women's health. It's called Xiaoyao San or Buplerman Dongkuai formula. And this formula is easy to find and easy to get. And it is a formula that works for the more irritable, depressed patient who's also very deficient and tired. And there's a modification for this where 2 herbs are added, Mudan pea, which is a kind of peony bark, and also gardenia. And these just make this traditional formula more heat clearing. And so it's more powerful for women who are having hot flashes. But this is a formula used for all kinds of menstrual disorders also. PMS, it's very, very common to be used for. And when you add these heat clearing herbs, it does a little better for the menopausal woman. And even though some of these formulas have a little bit of Angelica sinensis, Dong Quai, which is have mild estrogenic activity in the midst of these formulas, it doesn't really have an impact because we're not really using enough of it. And I'll show you, there's a study that was done on 10 years, over 20,000 women. This was done in China, who were taking tamoxifen and then had menopausal symptoms on tamoxifen and were given this powder to take. And there was no estrogenic effect. There were no side effects. And it was very safe use, had a very safe profile in terms of any interactions or problems or digestive upsets or anything like that. I do recommend taking these with food in your stomach. But this is for those of you not familiar with Chinese herbs, this is one of the most used formulas and it's easy to find. And again, I'm going to give you brands that are safe and not contaminated to use. So this is applies to a lot of women. This is one of my favorite formulas. The next one, Heavenly Emperor formula. And I think it should be called Heavenly Empress formula in this context. But it is for a woman who's very, very, very dry, very, very anxious, and her adrenals are really depleted. She's not coping well with stress. She's not sleeping. And she is definitely having emotional issues. She might even be having palpitations. And this is a really super yin nourishing, moistening, blood building kind of a formula that also calms you down. And so with menopause comes sleep disruption, with hot flashes comes sleep disruption. And this is a very deeply nourishing formula. And again, it's safe for long-term use. If the usual dose is not sufficient, you can double the dose and see if that takes care of it for the woman. And this has some very nice yin tonics in it, along with ginseng for strength and endurance and the ability to cope with stress. And so I really like this. There's also salvia miltiorhiza, Donshen is in this. And we've talked about this herb a lot in terms of cancer. It's one of my favorite herbs for cancer patients. And so that's in here too. So it helps blood flow and keeps blood from clotting, which of course is a risk in cancer patients as well. And then has some herbs for emotions, calming the emotions, and also clearing the mind, you know, so that you have lucidity. It's one of my favorite formulas, and it's very safe, very, very safe to use and easy to find, very common formula. You can easily find it also. And then I have a slide with a couple of references. One of the references I used, just published in March 2019, is a wonderful paper. It's titled Chinese Medicines Improve Perimenopausal Symptoms Induced by Surgery, Chemo Radiotherapy, and Endocrine Treatments in Breast Cancer. It's a great paper and well written. And there's a couple of other papers here that I've included, one from the Kauffman database called Chinese Herbal Medicine for Menopausal Symptoms. There's a lot of literature, published literature, and good studies on all of this. And then I've given the acupuncturists here a slide with the points that I select for menopausal women. And so, again, I think if we want to have a discussion just about acupuncture for those of you, I'm happy to make a call to do that. You can let me know if you want to do that, and I'll explain the rationale for these points. But for those of you traditionally trained, I think you'll recognize these points, and you have to just decide if the woman's more depleted, if she needs more support in her nourishment or more support in her adrenals, or if she's more emotional and if she's more exhausted. And so more irritable. So I'll talk about that with the acupuncturist separately if you wish. And then I have a list of really great references on acupuncture and menopause. And there, some of these are double-blind randomized studies. And so they're great papers. They're really great. And they're pretty recent, 2018, 2017, 2016. And so that if you want to look at these, you certainly can. But I summarized, you know, how we use these. And then again, for hot flashes, I've listed about six references for you, some really good studies. Some are randomized trials on how to use acupuncture, not just herbal medicine, for specifically for hot flashes. And for those of you Chinese trained, these would be the more yin nourishing points for the most part. But remember, you also need to support the qi because these women are totally exhausted. Now, some of the exhaustion comes from sleep disruption. And what's really interesting in the Chinese 24-hour clock is a lot of women going through menopause wake up around 3 in the morning, which is the time of the liver meridian. And we know that the liver rules the blood and the menstrual cycle, and emotions like irritability and depression. And so usually we'll have some liver symptoms or use liver points or liver herbs in these women. Now, the next formula I want to show you is just made of three well-known Chinese herbs. It's got astragalus, which we've talked about a lot in terms of supporting the bone marrow and especially the white cells and treating both leukopenia and neutropenia. And also, it's one of the great immune tonics because of that. And it's a great qi tonic in general. But there's a lot of studies on the repletion of the bone marrow in cancer patients. You would be careful in leukemia patients with a nerve like that. In this formula also has some Dong Quai in it, and then Visiphus, which is red date. And so this is a really nice tea. It tastes good. You can buy it in granules and have women just put it in water and drink it as tea in warm water. It's really nice. And you can also just have them take it in a little bit of water and drink it as medicine. You can get it in capsules as well. And the dose ranges for these tonic kind of herbs are the same, about 3 grams twice a day, and then go up if you need to. You can also buy Chinese herbs, single herbs, in little packets. And so some practitioners would give a woman one packet of astragalus, one packet of angelica, and one packet of Sisyphus, to put those three packets into a cup twice a day. And so with a simple formula, you can do that. And you can order a lot of these from some of the distributors I'm going to give you. These are not hard things to find. And then I have given a list of points that I use for insomnia. And so most of them are calming the spirit, nourishing the yin, and supporting the kidneys and the heart and quieting the liver. So for Chinese medicine people, you know what I mean. And then I've also got about 8 references here on how acupuncture is used, studies on menopause and insomnia. And I just want to tell the people who aren't Chinese medicine practitioners, this is a very effective and usually very quickly, once you start women on some acupuncture and or on some of these herbs, they start to feel better right away. So you can have a small stock of a few formulas in your office if you treat a lot of women in your practice. Let's say you're primarily a breast cancer oncologist, or if your practice is mostly women, then you might want to experiment with these, or we can talk about them when you have a patient like that. You can bring that question to the call if you want to. Now, another common symptom for women on aromatase inhibitors is the joint pain that goes along with low estrogen because there are estrogen receptors in your connective tissue. And that's why menopausal women are also less limber and less flexible. And there's a whole clinical pearl just on this topic. So I'm not going to belabor it here, but I have listed the points that I use. And you can use local points right around the joints as well. And you can use heat, amoxa on the points. And then I have a little formula that I just put Romania, Shudiwang, white peony, schizandra, and lycium, which is goji berries, for those of you who don't know. And these are just really yin moistening, tendon and ligament moistening kinds of herbs. And the white peony is used by itself just for flexibility. And in Ayurveda, they use a mixture of ghee and turmeric to increase flexibility. A lot of yoga retreats, they'll give you like golden milk where that's made with ghee and turmeric, and this makes you more limber and warms you up. And so I'll just make a little formula like this. In my clinic, I have liquid extracts, and I'll just mix these together in a bottle, and I'll give it to women, and then they take a teaspoon or two every day. And so that's another way that you can use these herbs. But again, for those of you who aren't Chinese medicine clinicians, this helps like right away. It doesn't take long. And then the more they take the formula, the better they feel, the more stable they become with their menopausal symptoms. And then the lecture that we had on aromatase inhibitors, clinical pearls in the resource library, I also talked a lot about vitamin D and also just stretching. You know, if you've lost elasticity for whatever reason, just because you were sedentary perhaps, or you had a surgery that or an injury that restricted you, just moving more and stretching more relieves this symptom. And sometimes that's all that's required. There are studies on yoga and Tai Chi for the joint pain associated with aromatase inhibition as well. So there's a deeper dive on that particular topic. There's a whole like 15 or 20 minutes and slides on that in the library. And then we come to depression, and Chinese medicine is really good with both anxiety and depression, and also gives some relief pretty quickly. And one of the main herbs that's used is bupleurum or chai hu. And just mixing that together with white peony is a really simple formula to just smooth things out and lift up a woman's spirits. And again, these are not habituating in any way. They're really just things that help open up congestion in the blood flow and the liver and the emotions, and also nourish the yin, help a woman to be calm and feel at ease. A lot of these women are just wired and tired, and they are so burnt out they can't actually relax and rest, and then you can't think clearly. And so you can, all these things are good for any menopausal woman, not just women who are cancer patients who have had menopause induced by their treatments. But these are particularly safe formulas for those of you who don't know Chinese medicine. These are super safe formulas, and they're safe for women who are undergoing other treatments as well, because they're nourishing. They're primarily nourishing and food-like, not drug-like. So you don't have to really worry so much about interactions. Now, there's a really great study that I found The title of the paper is A Systematic Review on the Efficacy, Safety, and Types of Chinese Herbal Medicines for Depression. And there are a couple of traditional formulas that are used. One of them is Xiaoyao San, which we talked about earlier, just as a general menopause formula, but it is also a great PMS mood balancer, and also the depression and anxiety that come often with menopause and hormonal changes. There's another well-known formula called Chai Hu Shugan or Bupleurim and Cyperus, which can also be used, a little less common. And then another one that is called Ganmai Datsao San, and that has licorice and wheat berry and date in it. And the wheat berry is in there because it's nourishing. A lot of women in early Chinese history weren't well nourished. And I know with the whole gluten thing, we wouldn't want to use this in everyone, but I put it here because it works well. And so you can just think about using the Chai Hu, the Bupleurim, and the white peony, just those two things together. And those really work well, just simple. And the Chai Hu is bitter, though, so it's nice to take that in a capsule. All right. And then I have listed a slide with all of the points that I use for menopausal depression, and they're very similar to the points that I use in general for menopause, because the underlying issues and etiologies are the same energetically in Chinese medicine. But there are beautiful points for calming the spirit and nourishing the heart and opening up the emotions and uplifting you. Chinese medicine is so beautiful because when you use it, you treat every layer of the person. So there's the layer of the qi, which is the energy of life. There's the layer of the Shen or the spirit and the emotions, which and the psyche, which needs no explanation. And then there's the layer that's called the Jing, which is about really our transpersonal self and that which connects us to the universe and gives us longevity as well. And so there's no idea like that in Western medicine, or word for that in Western medicine. But every time you take an herb or every time you use a point in the Chinese model, you're touching every one of these layers of a person. It's very, very beautiful kind of treatment. And so that's why you can use the same formulas for a broad spectrum of different conditions and in a patient population as well. Because remember, in a depleted patient population, like a woman induced into menopause who's going through the stress of cancer treatments, that the depletion is a core piece of her pattern. And so these kinds of tonics, I don't think there's really anything else like these wonderful Chinese tonics, which is why I chose to talk about them. I also want to talk about vaginal dryness. There's a group of researchers in Iran, a group of women physicians that have studied a whole bunch of naturopathic treatments for vaginal dryness related to menopause. And their studies are great, so I've put a couple of them in here. They did one study comparing vaginal use of royal jelly to vaginal estrogen cream, and looking at the impact on the tissue and also the women's comfort. And so it's really about the lining thinning because of lack of hormonal support, and it's quite painful to have intercourse, and the pH of the vagina can change, and you can feel burning, and so it's very uncomfortable for a lot of women. And the outcome of this particular study was that treatment with the vaginal royal jelly, which is made into a cream, was more effective than the conjugated estrogen cream, or just a lubricant by itself. And so that's really interesting to me. And so you can get royal jelly and then just like mix it into something like almond oil or olive oil and have the woman put it in her vagina. You don't have to make a fancy cream. So you can think about that for women who you might not want to give estrogen to, or who just are asking you for something natural first. So that's pretty simple. There was another study that they did on these women complaining of vaginal atrophy and dryness, painful intercourse, using vaginal vitamin E vaginal vitamin D, and then a combination of the two. And there's a couple papers they published on that. And so you can have a woman just to take an oil-based vitamin E capsule and just punch a hole in it with a needle and then squeeze it into her vagina and then just put her finger in there and swab it around so the tissue can absorb it. Vitamin D and vitamin E come in drops. So you can also, the woman can just put some on her hand and then swab her vagina and vulva with these vitamins. And so these studies showed that there was a lot of protective effect. There was less pain during intercourse for these women, less dryness, and the tissue looked more vascular and full of blood flow. And so these are so simple and so safe that you can have women try them. One of the studies this group did, the one with the D plus E, was on a group of women who are on tamoxifen. And so I think it's quite safe to try any of these therapies that we just mentioned, oil, jelly, vitamin E, vitamin D, or a combination. You know, I might mix all of those together and suggest that to a woman. They only used 100 units of vitamin E and 1,000 units of vitamin D in their dose. And so that's not very much. It'd be easy to do a couple times a day. And I think most women would be happy to do something like that. The other thing that we want to be concerned about when we lose estrogen support, of course, is loss of bone mass. And there are incredible Chinese herbal formulas with good studies showing the capacity to slow down the loss of bone, but also to restore bone mass. So, of course, slower than any drug, but I actually have seen these work. And for women that don't want to take the bisphosphonates, like Zometa and Fosamax, if they're just osteopenic, I think you can safely use Chinese herbs and bone minerals and lifestyle interventions to protect women's bones. What's interesting about osteoporosis is it's although normally when women go through menopause, they'll lose some bone mass, only in modern cultures and in mostly upper middle class professional women have the worst incidence of osteoporosis. So these would tend to be women eating very rich Western diets and perhaps being much more sedentary and eating foods that cause calcium to leave the bones, like excess animal protein or too much carbonated beverages and coffee and sugar. And so all those combinations, I feel that osteoporosis is really a lifestyle disease of modern women. You don't see osteoporosis in women who live in villages in Africa and who have 13 babies and nurse them all and give all their calcium to their babies. You don't see osteoporosis in those women that you would think would have a loss of bone mass because their weight bearing is so daily and they aren't eating a lot of food that causes calcium to leave the bones. But I think it's mostly that they're weight bearing almost every day for most of their lives. So I have a slide on a formula that I designed and that I mix in my clinic, but I'll go through the herbs because you should just know these herbs and then you'll recognize them in other formulas. So the very first formula, the Erzhen Tong that I listed, has a lot of these herbs in it as well. So there's a famous formula called Restore the Right, which is a kidney qi formula. And most of the kidney qi herbs, including the most used, Romania, is known to support bone mass. And also there's a couple of other herbs with really good studies showing their impact on healthy bone. One is cerealia fruit. It's kind of a pea. Epimedium leaf. This is commonly found in a lot of bone formulas. The salvia again is here, the danshen, the salvia miltiariza. And Fructus cornea, it's a little red fruit. Again, we come back to the white peony, the Radix peonia alba. And then there's an herb called Zisassi that has a a lot of research on it. You don't have to use all these herbs. You could just even use the Restore Right combination by itself for a bone formula for a woman with just a little bit of osteopenia. But I designed this formula with all the herbs that have good studies in them along with that formula. And then I've on the slide put the acupuncture points that I would use in a woman who is losing bone mass. And so you'll have that there. I give a pretty high dose of this. I make this as a liquid extract and I give 2 teaspoons a day. I've also given you a slide for a great formula that's made by an herbal company called Health Concerns. It's called Osteo Herbal Formula and the dose is 3 tabs a day. And it has a lot of these herbs in it, a slightly different emphasis in this formula, but it's a traditional formula for bone health. And there's another formula by the Evergreen Herbs Company. I can't remember what it's called, but you could always call and ask them which formula it is. And then I combined this together with Designs for Health Osteo Ben, 2 caps twice a day, which is a bone mineral botanical formula that has no copper in it. Most bone health formulas for women have copper in them because copper is part of connective tissue health. But we want to avoid supplementing copper in our women with cancer histories because copper can drive angiogenesis. And so we don't want to add copper in a supplement. So I really like this. One of the only bone health, osteoporosis focused formulas for women that I've found that doesn't have copper in it. And it's a really nice formula. It has the bone minerals and it has, I think it has horsetail, equisetum, and some genistein. And it's a really nice formula, really, really nice formula. It comes in a capsule. It's easy to swallow. And so remember that building bone is about not only the minerals, but the collagen protein matrix and inflammation and weight bearing, all of those things. And so having estrogen depletion is not sufficient to get osteoporosis. You have to have other factors contributing. So the very last slide I've given you has a list of the herb companies that I recommend that are reliable, that will not be selling you contaminated herbs from China and have really high quality formulas, have all the traditional formulas, and also have really good support teams and good literature on all these formulas. So I will stop there, and if you would like to share what you do in your practice or ask any questions, I know there's some acupuncturists on this call. You can unmute yourself by pressing *7, or you can just share your approach. Okay, someone just unmuted themselves.
Hi, this is Warren Ross.
Hi, Warren.
Hi, how are you?
Good, nice to hear your voice. What are your thoughts?
My concern is for a lot of my older women patients who are clearly postmenopausal and they obviously have vaginal atrophy, and the thing that plagues them is incontinence.
Right.
So I'm wondering if these herbal products, particularly the royal jelly, might have some inherent value for that subgroup of people, even if they don't have a menopausal symptoms induced by cancer therapy.
You know, sphincter control is lost when estrogen goes. And so in Chinese medicine, that's considered a deficiency of the kidney qi. And so you can use some of the herbs, almost all the herb formulas, particularly that bone formula, is really strengthens the kidney qi. So you would want to use that with it. And I have no idea. I mean, the royal jelly is not estrogenic. So, you know, a little tiny bit of estrogen cream topically usually makes women a lot more comfortable. Do you do that? Use bioidentical hormones?
I do.
I think that's the best thing to do locally because we know it would work. But then you can use these kidney qi formulas and then you actually get, they raise the qi so that there is more strength there in the pelvic floor. And then I have women do Kegel exercises.
Yeah. No, I send them for the physical therapy. I just
Yeah.
I'd never heard about the royal jelly, and I just think it's an interesting idea.
But it's nourishing.
I'll use.
Yeah, it's nourishing to the tissue.
Okay. Good.
Okay. Anybody else?
Hi, Nalini.
Hi, dear.
I just wanted to check if these are safe to use concurrently while they're within treatment, like for postmenopausal women on exemestane.
Yes, you can. Yes,
okay,
you can.
Perfect.
Because they're not going to give the drug more work to do.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, good question, though. Good question. So many of the herbal formulas that are mentioned here have been given to women on tamoxifen, women on aromatase inhibitors. So that's why I chose the formulas for this lecture, so you don't have to worry about that. Judy?
A couple quick ones. The name of the evergreen formula is OsteoPlus.
Oh, great. Thank you.
Yeah. And what do you think about TRF for osteoporosis? Do you include that?
You could. You could. I actually use that a lot for degenerative arthritis, you know, and osteoarthritis. You could definitely use it. You could definitely use it. It's like a growth factor for bone.
Right. And quickly, what's ESM? What point is ESM?
Ear Shenmen.
Oh, Shenmen. Uh-huh.
Yeah. The ear point.
Shenmen.
Ear point Shenmen.
Yeah, yeah.
That's my short answer for that.
Very good. Thanks so much.
Okay. All righty. All right.
And then
this
is Warren with one other comment. I don't do the acupuncture anymore. You think it'd be reasonable to teach people to do self-massage on the acupuncture points?
I always do that. I show them where I draw the point on their body. I show them
nice.
Where to find
okay.
it. I send them a picture of it. And I even,
yeah.
some people, I have them do moxa, you know, heat. And I have them do it with the tip of an incense stick, you know. And
the only other point for osteoporosis is there's a product called the Natto-Tocotrienol that has some very nice literature on bone building.
There is actually now Designs for Health has a higher milligram capsule. They have the Natto E, and so
right.
I would give 600 milligrams of tocotrienol a day. That's what I would do for
okay.
that. Yeah,
but,
yeah. Barry Tan, who's one of the principal researchers, I just gave a clinical pearl on tocotrienol. So you might want to look at those slides.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, I love tocotrienols. There's a lot of good studies on breast cancer, prostate cancer. Not a lot, but some good studies. Breast cancer, prostate
right.
cancer, pancreatic cancer, and ovarian cancer for tocotrienols.
Right.
And also for metabolic syndrome and diabetes. And
right.
So that's our patient population.
That's true.
Yeah. Anything else? Warren, is that it?
No, that I'm fine. Thank you.
Oh, you are? Okay, can you mute yourself again, please, so we don't listen to your papers?
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
Thank you. All right. So next we're coming to – oh, somebody else had a question. Oh, no, that's still Warren's phone. Okay. So the next thing – I want to remember to tell you this. There's a really good resource for all of you. The SAGE journals, they publish a lot of medical journals. They publish the journal Integrative Cancer Therapies. And if you get on their mailing list, you will get every month a notification when they have free articles on integrative cancer care that you can download. And so you go to journals.sagepub/articles/ICTA, ICAT Tom Allen. And, there's a ton of Creative Commons journals there that are royalty free and you can download them. And so every month you'll get an email about newly published articles that are available for free on integrative cancer care. It's a great resource. Okay. Now, the next thing is Susie Thompson submitted a question about lymphedema. And I don't know, Susie, are you on the call? I don't know if you're on the call. All right. So she'll listen to the recording, I guess. So one of the things, I'm going to use this as a teaching moment because Susie submitted a couple of a case and then a couple of questions that didn't complete all the requirements of submitting a case study. And I really almost rejected this question for the same reason. And so I'm going to just use it as a teaching example, because the work of gathering all the information from the patient, the patient records, to do a really good case study is your learning experience. And I'm not going to do all that work for you. And so I'm going to go through this question and show you why it's necessary to do that, and why it's really important to have all of the information if you want me to give you a good answer. So here's your question. Regarding lymphedema, I have a client who is suffering in her lower legs after a full hysterectomy with several lymph nodes removed. She has support stockings. She raises her legs. She has lymphatic drainage massage twice a week. I've put her on anti-inflammatory diet. Are there any other suggestions that would help? Any supplements that might help? The physiotherapist is reluctant to do drainage massage. She's worried she might spread the cancer, which is a common belief where I live. I hope I'm right that that's not an issue. So I really have two questions. So my first statement is, you haven't even told us what type of cancer this woman has, how old she is, she's obese, she's diabetic, and things that would impact lower leg edema as well. So one of the things that's really important is to really give a thorough description. How old is she? What's her lifestyle? Is she sedentary? Is she able to exercise? What's her diet like? What kind of emotional state is she in? Is she hypertensive? Is she obese? Does she have stress disorder, sleeping disorder that would cause her to have high cortisol? Does she have cardiovascular disease, kidney disease, circulatory problems? Does she have varicose veins? Does she have medication she's taking that cause fluid retention? Does she have any adhesions in her pelvis that might impair surgery along with the loss of her lymph nodes? Is she currently have ascites or peritonitis? So these are all questions that I would want to know about. And so one of the things, when you have a complex patient, you have to take a really good history. And so if you're not accustomed to doing that, then the work of doing a case study for this course is that. And for those of you who want to be certified, you have to present me two case studies. So you might as well practice if you want to get certification. But it will teach you how to really think through a case of a complex, vulnerable patient. So in terms of the mechanical things to do for lymphedema, all of the things mentioned, especially if she can raise her legs up above the level of her heart, she'll get a little more drainage than just putting them on a stool while sitting. And so she could be in bed. I don't think we mentioned just flexing her feet a lot or doing bicycle movements with her legs to get more circulation going. But it's also important not to sit with the groin area flexed, because it's harder for fluid to flow back into the torso. So having the legs extended is helpful. So those are just super practical things. But here's some more. I'm going to give a generalized answer since we don't have all those other details from the history. So remember that we also practice individualized medicine, which is why you can't just throw out a question, what do I do about lymphedema in the lower legs, and get a really good answer that's for the patient in front of you. You can get a general answer. So I'm going to give a general answer since we don't have all those details. So protein intake is important. If you're protein depleted, you will have more fluid in your tissue. If you're protein repleted, the fluid will stay inside your blood vessels. So that's one thing, 40 to 50 grams of protein a day. A ketogenic diet also causes some diuresis and loss of fluid. So a person like this could just do a ketogenic diet 2 days a week and the other days be really strict. Warren, you're still not muted. You can just
mute your
phone.
Press six.
Yeah.
I thought six mutes it.
Try just doing star seven again and see if that happens. I'm not quite sure. Or you could just put your phone on mute. Thank you. Okay. So
do star six.
Thank
you. You have to do star before six.
Okay. Thanks, Judy. All right. So changing the diet so that it is, of course, we want to restrict sodium, but a low glycemic paleo type diet and then strict ketogenic a couple days a week will decrease fluid volume. And also doing intermittent fasting, 13 to 16 hours every 24-hour period, will decrease fluid volume. So those are things that can have some impact. So we want to reduce edema, but how could we produce diuresis? So ketogenic diet produces diuresis. We want to address inflammation also. So not only an anti-inflammatory diet, I would put omega-3 fatty acids in there, 2 to 4 grams a day. And also I like Designs for Health Inflammatone as a general anti-inflammatory. I would give a high dose, like 3 to 4 capsules 4 times a day to really dial down the inflammation. And that's a formula based on curcumin and boswellia and proteases. And also we want to think about supporting the health of the blood vessels and the connective tissue in a patient like this. So we want the diet to be high in phytophenols. So that's lots of color and pigment from vegetables in the diet and berries if we're not restricting all fruits. Quercetin and bromelain supplement would be really great for a person like this. Quercetin is really great for repairing the linings of our bodies. So I use that for the lining of the blood vessel, the endothelium. I also use it like for women who have chronic interstitial cystitis to repair the lining of the bladder. Quercetin is really great and also has anti-tumor activity. And quercetin is best absorbed when you take it with bromelain, which is a protease. If a woman has pineapple or latex allergies, you would not want to give her bromelain, but you could just give her a protease, a regular digestive enzyme with the quercetin. And I do 500 milligrams 4 times a day, so you get 2 grams of quercetin a day. Thorne makes a really nice lipid-soluble quercetin, which enhances some of its absorption. It's tough to absorb quercetin. And then we would want to make sure that her bowels were moving so there wasn't any additional congestion unnecessarily in her pelvis, especially near the groin. So we would support normal bowel function with a plant-based high-fiber diet and support a healthy microbiome with those fibers and some probiotics or fermented foods. And if she's constipated, you might give her magnesium citrate as a stool softener. And then, you know, you can also use potassium-sparing, non-irritating botanicals that have mild diuretic activity, like dandelion root is really safe, burdock root is really safe, parsley root is really safe. So those are all really safe herbal diuretics. You know, you will not get into trouble with those. And you can take them every day and never worry about any adverse effects or problems. And interestingly enough, black cumin seed oil is used in India as a diuretic as well. I have no experience using it that way myself, but it's in the literature. I also use pyridoxal 5-phosphate, which is the active form of B6, as a mild diuretic, and just 50 milligrams. A day. There's a really great Chinese herbal formula, and it's called Wu Ling San, W-U-L-A-N-G-S-A-N. It's a very famous formula, and there's published studies on PubMed on this formula, and it's really nice because it really protects your kidney function. So even a person who has kidney dysfunction or kidney disease can use this because it's really safe, and it works by inducing diuresis and naturesis by inhibiting the renin-angiotensin-aldosterone system. And so it's a great formula, and it's also easy to find. So you could take a look at that formula, very safe. And there also is a clinical pearl on lymphedema, I believe, along with the one on aromatase inhibitors I just mentioned. So there are more discussion of all of this. So that's how I think about a patient like this. What are all of the functions we need to support to have less fluid pressure in the lower leg? What are all the things, functional, and anatomic, and practical that we could do to change her physiology enough to have less fluid in her legs. But these women have to elevate, they have to do the lymphatic massage, and they have to wrap, they have to have pressure bandages and sleeves on their legs, because their legs can turn into balloons and it's very uncomfortable. And a lot of my patients who are recommended radical excisions of their lymph nodes, I just stop and talk to the surgeon about it, because it creates such a decrease in quality of life, and some of these women aren't going to live very long anyway. So I would like them not to have to deal with lymphedema. And there's, you know, at least on the West Coast here, there's thinking that radical removal of lymph nodes is doesn't really change long-term outcomes very much. And why do that to someone? So especially in breast cancer, I'll look at that. And so there's less of that going on here on the West Coast. I can tell you that surgeons are much more conservative about how many lymph nodes they take. And that's, I think, should be a highly individualized decision. So I'll stop there if anyone wants to talk about lymphedema or what they do with that. Any questions about my interventions, feel free to unmute yourself by pressing *7. And then after that, I'll just bring a couple of interesting papers to your attention.
This is Warren again.
Hi.
It's Judy again.
Silly thing.
Whoops. Okay.
Oh, I'm sorry.
One at a time.
Go ahead. No, please.
Warren, go ahead.
A silly thing, but one that works, particularly if the weather is warm, is just walking in deep water up to their waist or chest, because the hydrostatic forces of the water helps. It's a simple way of just reducing the
That's great. That's great. And your dog agrees.
I'm gonna turn myself
okay,
off.
Okay, thank you. That's a great suggestion. Okay, Judy.
Well, mine's along similar lines. I would strongly suggest Qigong. It really helps, it, particularly if the person that you were to send them to knows how to open and close joints and cavities, particularly the ankles,
yeah,
the knees,
yeah,
and
yeah,
the groin.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'd lead you to a great resource, because there's instructors all over the world,
right,
that have trained through,
right,
a man named Bruce Francis,
uh-huh,
and his website is Energy Arts, and he keeps his website up to date as to who's certified to be teaching. So
uh-huh,
that's a great resource for everyone anywhere.
That is a great, great suggestion. I love that. That's why we have this community, because there's a wealth of knowledge here. Thank you. All right. So let me just bring your attention to a couple of papers, and then if there's anything anyone else wants to talk about, we can do that. I find a really found a recently published paper on the mind-body connection on PTSD being linked to increased risk of ovarian cancer later in life. So there is your mind-body connection, which just means you should know your patients well. And you should know, if you're not treating someone for cancer, if they have a risk factor in their early life, some early life traumas are related to all kinds of risk factors later in life. And it's a really nice paper. It was published, I think, just a month ago, September 2019, this month. So it's a great paper. There's another paper that I found, and it's called The Therapeutic Effect. The Therapeutic Effect of Probiotics and the Microbiome, the State of the Microbiome on Cancer Immunotherapy. And so this is a really something that oncologists are getting interested in. And there's some really interesting studies showing that women, or all patients who have more bifidobacteria in their gut, have a better response to the immunotherapies, like the PD-L1 inhibitors and the checkpoint inhibitors. So I think that's really interesting. And then there was also some studies showing that dysbiosis created by antibiotics also creates less response to these drugs. And so that the oncologists are starting to pay attention to this, but they don't have the knowledge we have. So if we have a patient that their oncologist is going to be treating in this way, we can enhance their response to these drugs and maybe even ask the oncologist, wait 2 weeks and let's work on their gut a little bit and not only give the bifidobacteria, but give soluble fiber with that so that the bifidobacteria can colonize and establish themselves. And so I think that that's something we can bring to the table. Oncologists are becoming aware of this, but they don't know what to do. So we have the what to do intervention side of it. And then the other gut-related paper I found is called Strategies to Promote the Abundance of Acromantia eosinophila. I will tell you what that is in a minute. And the Emerging Impact of Probiotics in the Gut, Evidence from Dietary Intervention Studies. And so acromantia is an organism that should be in our gut. And when you do, if you do stool microbiome analyses and you see no acromantia, then this gut is really imbalanced and really needs repletion and rebalancing of its ecosystem. So it's a marker organism. And there are lots of things that this study looked at to replenish acromantia. And so these are some things we do anyway, but I want to bring it to your attention because if you do stool analyses and microbiome analyses, you should be looking for this organism because it's really important and it has an impact on the integrity of the lining of the intestine. It's associated with obesity, diabetes, inflammation. It's associated with leaky gut syndrome, and it's associated with the presence of other healthy bacteria as well. So this study looked at just supplementing it orally or supplementing selected probiotics. So by adding Lactobacillus rhamnosus and Bifidobacteria animalis, the acromantia increased. And also anything you do to increase the ratio of Firmicutes to Bacteroides, which is what we want. And sometimes that's reversed when somebody's had a lot of antibiotics or a lot of chemo, then you need to restore that. So again, it's not complicated. If you use the Bifidobacteria and the Lactobacillus, but choose the Rhamnosus species and the Animalis lactis species, you'll find products like this. Look at Claire, K-L-A-I-R-E. They have some great high quality supplements where there's more these more unique formulas of probiotics. And then you always have to put prebiotics in because most of the oral probiotics that we take don't colonize and don't stay in the gut. They just pass through. And so if you want them to actually colonize, you have to work more on using prebiotics than probiotics. And so that's really important. Interestingly, metformin increases acromantia, and it's interesting to note that acromantia is decreased in diabetics. When you solve insulin resistance, you get more acromantia. Also, the Chinese herb dahuang, Chinese rhubarb root, in small amounts, not huge amounts. There's actually studies that show that it increases acromantia in the gut, which might be why it resolves some inflammatory bowel disease associated with constipation. Intermittent fasting increases acromantia, and moderate exercise increases it, and also foods that are rich in caffeic acid, and I made a list of those for you. The things that reduce acromantia in the gut, along with antibiotics and chemotherapy, et cetera, are a high-fat diet. Like people who eat a paleo diet or stay on keto diets for long periods of time have low acromantia in their gut. But I think that's partly because they don't eat much soluble fiber on those diets. Excess alcohol consumption, patients with insulin resistance and obesity, and people who have more systemic inflammation. One study looked at TNF-alpha, IL-6, and NF-kappa-B, and those patients who are more inflamed have less acromantia. But it might be because they have leaky gut syndrome. So you have to think about the whole etiology and the contributing factors. And then I put a page in the notes for all of you of about 15 foods and herbs and spices that are high in caffeic acid, and they're really common. So there's turmeric, basil, thyme, oregano, sage, the cabbage family vegetables, apples, strawberries, mushrooms, olive oil, pears. So these are things that might be in a healthy diet anyway, but can, you know, make sure people use them on a daily basis. So those were, I thought, some interesting papers that are very well done papers and give actionable information. And so it is an hour is up. I'm happy to stay for anybody who wants to talk about anything else. So you can unmute yourself if you have a comment or a question or a request.
Hey, it's Stacy. Can you hear me?
Stacy, I thought that was you in Sacramento, but your name doesn't show up.
Oh.
Hi, I'm so glad you're on the call.
I am here. So just a quick comment on the probiotics with immunotherapy.
Yes.
So there was a paper out of MD Anderson, and they looked at a whole bunch of patients on immunotherapy with melanoma, and they found that people who did not respond had were either on probiotics or they had recently had antibiotics, and they didn't talk about what kind of probiotics. But just
And
in their series, 42% of patients were just taking probiotics. So that tells you, you know, people think they're good for you. They don't know what they're taking.
Right,
they just go to Costco.
Right.
Who knows what they're doing? So in patients who had a high fiber plant-based diet, they were 5 times more likely to respond.
Yes. So that tells us that creating a biosystem in which a normal ecosystem can be restored because there's short-chain fatty acids there as a result of eating a high soluble fiber diet, that is the best path to a normal microbiome.
Yep.
Yeah, I think that's really important.
Usually, when I see people, I'm telling them to stop their probiotic and just start eating plants and fiber.
Mm-hmm. I think that's really a good safe bet, and I think we just don't know enough. You know, I think maybe. What do you think of this idea of giving someone probiotics maybe for a couple of weeks and then stopping them before they have the immunotherapy? Do you think that is?
Yeah,
most of them just pass right through. You know.
Yeah, no, I think that would be fine. I think, you know, try to get the gut, like if you have a patient you know they're going to be starting, just try to get their gut in as good a shape as possible before they start, however you want to do that, and then probably stop them, but then really ramp up the fiber.
Right. Most of my patients are on plant-based diets, and so my particular patients already are doing that, but I think in the general population, that is not true.
Yeah, they're not.
All right, anything else? Okay, everyone, thank you so much for being on the call, and I'll see you next month. If you have any requests for topics, just send us an email to support@integrativecanceranswers.com, and I'll be sure to include your topic. Thank you and good night.
The conference is